now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us this evening with the hope in your hearts that the 2017 Lions, still unbeaten at this stage, will remain so for a couple of weeks more. And I have today's news bulletin. No one pulled out injured today. In all seriousness, they've been doing choir practice, apparently. A lot of choir practice for some reason. I don't quite get it, but that's the sort of 2017 thing. Apparently the Scots have been making themselves heard, which is not bad going since there are so few of them. And also a question, any New Zealanders in the house this evening? Excellent. I think we've got hard hats for them. Hand out the hard hats. I know you're very welcome and thank you for coming. We have an excellent panel this evening. We have two lions with us. We have one lion, which is that rare breed, which is a lion who was on a winning test series. We have the 1983 Dorking under 16 tennis champion. That's me, I'm not a lion. And we have the Sunday Times rugby correspondent who has covered every Lions match on every Lions tour since 1972, something like that, 1983. Please can you welcome Steve Jones here at the Sunday Times, Stuart Barnes of 1993 Lions fame and covered every tour since then, and Lawrence Dallaglio, part of the winning 97 tour. So, boys, between Stuart and Jonesy and Lawrence, there's been a lot of Lions territory covered. As journalists, we're supposed to be a bit cold-blooded and impartial. I just wondered, Jonesy and Barnsley, at this stage, on the eve of leaving for a trip like this, do you still feel that rare, raw excitement of a massive, major excitement in the sporting world before you, or is it another trip?
If you haven't got a childish excitement for going on another Lions tour, well, you shouldn't be doing it, really. I'm looking forward to it massively. There's bound to be stories, bound to be heroism, sporting disaster, so absolutely.
I think when you write and you broadcast every weekend for 20-odd years plus, there are times when you think, this is flat, and then you get a good game, and that gets you up. And the European Champions Cup final was something like that. And then you get the next thing, which makes you just get so excited. Now, I'm not a very excitable character most of the time. I can be morose, I can be pissed. but...
Just when you write.
I just about have a memory, and even now I can go back 24 years and... It's a great thing, Lions tours, you know, because when you say I was on the last but one, it always makes you feel as if you're quite recent and young. Of course, that was 24 years ago. but I remember I led the Lions out. I was captain for the first game in Whangarei, where this tour will start. It was one of the most exciting moments of my life, let alone my sporting life. So to concur with Steve, yes, if you're not up for this tour, then you've got no right to call yourself a rugby fanatic, journalist, player, anything.
And Lawrence, do you feel, because you were a Lion, is that bloodline running through you? Are they your family out there that you're supporting?
Yeah, well, good evening, everyone. I mean, I get terribly excited about the Lions tour because I did a little bit of research before I became a Lion and found, you know, read about some of the great tours and the history, and I think it's understanding what it really means. And most sporting contests are fairly sort of even, 50-50. The Lions Tour is not even in any way whatsoever. I mean, the whole thing is set up to fail, miraculously. You know, you're not even a team until last week, and you're playing against the best team in the world. So, I mean, how is that in any way fair? But what makes it so spectacular is that you have to overcome these incredible odds where you have to fly across the world, play against an entire nation, and it literally is you against the whole country. So I think that in the rare occasions when they do get it right and the chemistry does mix well together and you see these winning tours, it creates something incredibly special. Because if I asked every single player, you know, what is the pinnacle of your career, even in the modern era where the Lions is fighting for, you know, its survival, I'd like to think the players would say it's the greatest, you know, it's the greatest achievement of my rugby career. In fact, James Haskell, who's just replaced Billy Vunipola, said the same, and every other Lion will tell you the same.
And so, you say that as a World Cup winner. I mean, you suggested that before.
The 97 Lions came before the World Cup anyway, by the way, and it was the greatest.
You're good with your dates.
The greatest experience of my life, really, in that sense, because everything that you learn as an individual, as a rugby player, as a person, has to be put out on the table and shared with the people that you don't particularly like. And that takes a bit of doing, trust me. You know, that, I mean, for a Lions tour to be successful, you know, you can't wait until week 2, 3, 4, 5 to suddenly come out of your shell. You have to open up your everything, your rugby DNA, your you know, everything that makes you the person you are has to be shared with the group. And you know, and that changes the relationship you have with those players forever.
In what Lawrence says, as a player, we shouldn't be downbeat at these moments, but we all want Lions to win. I'm sure you guys are going to, maybe some of you are going to go to your rugby clubs on early in the morning on Saturdays to watch it over early morning, I guess. But they get together on Sunday, they've got to go to a dinner on Sunday, of all things. That's just what you want, is go to a bloody dinner.
And not drink.
And yeah, exactly. They fly on Monday, they arrive on Wednesday, they play on Saturday. Now, I'm afraid that it's not be downbeat. It is still a joyous thing, but these days that level of preparation is dangerous for a start. But you know, the idea that you can be ready for get 41 players ready for the first test in 2-3 weeks' time is ridiculous. So I just think that, you know, I'll never stop until they give the Lions proper preparation, which is 3 weeks minimum. Lawrence, on his tour, it came off because there were just some magnificent characters there, but they really are, the dice is really loaded against them. Stu?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the other thing about Lawrence's tour, South Africa, and luck plays a part. Karel du Plessis, who was a wonderful player, proved himself to be the most inept manager of all time. And Neil Jenkins, very good fullback, not a very good fullback, and a very good fly half, not a very good fullback, played fly half. The Lions' gamble, of course, was that South Africa wouldn't have enough sense to rain high balls down on him. And in commentary, I'm thinking, well, it's obvious. That's all the box are going to do. And they didn't put one high ball. And you need a bit of luck at some stage. And that's absolutely true. But, I mean, one thing I would say, I agree with Steve and Lawrence, the preparation time is ludicrous. But it actually makes you think, if they pull it off, what does this amount to? I think, no offence to Lawrence, but I think if the Lions win this series against the world champions, one of the greatest teams ever in New Zealand, with the lack of preparation and the schedule of fixtures, will be the greatest achievement by a distance by any Northern Hemisphere rugby team. And the other thing I'd briefly say is, don't just measure this tour by do they win or lose the series. Because of the quality of the opposition they're playing, you know, if you watch Super Rugby, just about four of the best, maybe five of the best five teams are the New Zealand five. And the Lions are just going bang, bang, bang. It's like the back straight at Sandown. The fence just come at you non-stop, really difficult. And if the Lions win four of those games and they win one of the test matches, taking everything into account, I think it'll actually be more of an achievement than winning a test series in Australia. It's that difficult.
But Barnsley, everyone will remember it as a win or a loss test series.
Yeah, of course.
That's how it'll go down.
That's how it is. Owen, on that one, Lions tour, you know, we've been on a lot of tours between us all. You say to me, one of the most memorable Lions fixtures ever, I say 2009 second test, Loftus-Versfeld against the champions of the world, South Africa. And I remember the fighting that was going on. South Africa were magnificent. Fourie du Preez was at his peak. O'Driscoll jumped up when, who was the substitute, came on, the great big giant flanker. Smashed him, it was utterly illegal. I'm in commentary saying, great hit, Dricko. and they lost. They won the third test, which was just, you know, it mattered neither here nor there. But not always, people will remember it, but maybe they should just remember sometimes, heroism isn't just in the winning of it, it's in the competing, and they can lose this series and be great Lions.
It's also what the players remember as well. I've just been doing this project for the Times, which at Times readers will be very lucky to read in a few days' time. there are 12 living Lions captains, past living Lions captains before Sam Warburton, and I've spoken to all 12 of them. And all the losing captains, they all say two things: what a great experience it was, and I can't believe we lost the thing. They're still sore. The oldest one is 85, Ronnie Dawson from 1959. Those Lions got beaten by a terrible refereeing decisions in the first test. And I said, do you remember the name of the referee? And he just spat out without any thought at all, Alan Fleury, the bastard. so they all know. But that was a Kiwi tour, which is part of, another part of the thing that the odds, where the odds are set against. So... Lawrence, you did a Kiwi Lions tour for a couple of weeks.
About 20, yeah. 21 minutes.
You were the sort of Billy Vunipola of 2005.
Oh, it was a nightmare. Broke my leg. Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah.
Barnes, you saw a whole Lions tour in New Zealand. I just wonder from your point of view. So from a journalist's point of view, I think maybe comment in a minute what it's like actually being there. But from a player's point of view, the reception, how hard it is, what the games are like. I mean, it's not a myth that it's different and harder than anywhere else, is it?
No, there's a major intensity. It's a psychological thing, because wherever you go, there's no escape. If a team comes to play in anywhere in Britain, there's major pockets of the country where no one knows who the hell they are. It's not like that in New Zealand. I mean, I was... about 4 years ago in the World Cup, and I was staying in a place called Nelson, commentating on a World Cup match between... Italy and the USA. It was a big game. I needed to be there. There's some lovely wine in Nelson. And I was recovering the day of the match in my hotel room. And the cleaning lady came in at about 10 to 1 in the afternoon. And she looked at me and she said, "Aren't you the bloke that played for England against New Zealand?" And I went, "Well," I said, "well, a long time ago." 1985, she said. I said, "Yeah, that was me." And she looked at me and said, "If you'd have had a left foot, you wouldn't have been half bad a player." if Jack Rowell, if Jeff Cook, if Dick Best had told me that, I'd have amounted to something. They know everything there is to know about the game, and they never let you off the hook.
Well, just before we get on to the positive things, I have to say that your concept of the heroic Lions in defeat, I'm afraid I don't buy it. I think there's a bloke on my right who wouldn't buy that at all. And I think that if the Lions are going to be as big as... we all know they are, and 35,000 people are going to go down there, we either got to prepare properly 3 or 4 weeks and everybody's got to move up, or we should stop doing it. Because I don't think Lawrence would have come back from 97 had they lost the second test and said, "Oh, we did really well there. We were heroes in defeat."
No, you're right. And New Zealand, make no mistake about it, is the hardest place in the world to play rugby and to win. We were lucky enough to go over there with England in just before the World Cup, and the reason we went there is because Clive Woodward actually asked us, who's actually played in New Zealand in an England shirt, and very few players put their hand up. And then he said, "Who's actually won a Test match in New Zealand?" And no one put their hand up. And so he said, "Well, until you can do a lot of things in rugby. You can win championships, European Cups, but actually, if you don't win a game in New Zealand against the All Blacks, would you not feel that there's something missing in your sort of CV of all the great things to do in rugby?" And I think the feeling was, yeah, of course there is. But the one thing you need to win in New Zealand is belief that you can win, because the All Blacks do have an aura about them. And if you don't believe that you can win, you're in serious trouble. And hopefully these Lions, when they sit together in their room, you know, that they will believe that. Because when Warren Gatland asked the same question, how many of you have actually beaten New Zealand? You know, a lot of hands will go up from the Irish because they won in Chicago, and that was a fantastic performance, you know, and that was a great victory. There'll be a few hands going up from the English players, and they beat New Zealand, but they've never beaten them in New Zealand. So when he asked that question, how many of you have actually won a test match here in New Zealand? Not one of those British Lions have ever done that for any of their countries. Wales have never beaten New Zealand in New Zealand, and Scotland haven't either. So, you know, they've got an opportunity to do something that they've never done before. But what that tells you is that if they want to do that, they're going to have to find a level of rugby that they've never found before. So for all of those people who don't believe, I do believe it is possible to win in New Zealand for these Lions, but they're going to have to find something that we haven't seen from any of those players. So, you know, whatever, 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 in terms of their performance when Jonesy marks them in the Sunday Times. they've got to find 15 out of 10 if they want to beat the All Blacks. And that is possible, but they've got to do it collectively and they've got to do it all on the same day. And you know, I don't want to be too downbeat about it. They have to believe that they can win because so much of rugby is won and lost before a ball's even been kicked. And I know that sounds a bit stupid to say it, but it's the truth. And especially when you play in New Zealand against the All Blacks, because they believe they're going to win. And, you know, and everyone keeps telling us how hard those midweek games are. And of course they're hard. But someone needs to gently remind them that they're playing the British and Irish Lions as well. And they're going to be hard for them too.
Yeah, good.
I like that, Lol.
Well
done.
Owen, people used to ask me, why do I always give Lawrence Dallaglio at least 9 out of 10 after a match? I said, well, it's obvious I might bloody meet him in the week ahead.
Because I know where you live. No, belief is a big thing, you know, it's a massive thing. And,
it's what Warren Gatland said when he announced the... Well, he was announced as the Lions coach in Edinburgh in, what was it, January, sometime earlier this season. First thing he said was, I want to take people who believe. He didn't say, I want to take the best in this position, the strongest in that position, the best lineup. He said, if they don't believe they're going to win, then I really don't want them. And that sort of, not just Lions, that takes you back. Lawrence understands that. He played with Gatland in a WASC team that had a core of steel, of self-belief. It's very easy to say, do you think you can win it? And you go to your coach, yeah, I think I can win it. But they're saying it, Lawrence, isn't there? And there's that deep-seated belief, and it's deep down in your guts and it's visceral and you can't articulate it, but it's either there or it's not.
Jonesy, you're a man with friends in New Zealand, or a friend maybe, I don't know, maybe not even that many. It's not just on the pitch, is it? It's all around. What sort of reception do you think the Lions will get this time? I asked with my own memories of 2005 in mind, when it was clear that the All Blacks or the nation didn't just want to win, but they wanted to rub noses in the ground.
No question.
And that was and that wasn't just the team; it was the Kiwi media and I mean, they had the street as well.
They had just lost the World Cup, though, hadn't they? So they hadn't won. I mean, they hadn't won a World Cup.
You know, since
87, so they had a point to prove.
You're right to crow, Lawrence, and I think that was part of the reason. They absolutely hated the fact there was a bunch of World Cup winners coming over there.
Quite right. And the coach as well. They probably hated him more.
Absolutely.
Well, he did go there. He did go there and saying, it's a little island and we're going to buy success with money because we're richer than your country. And he had Alistair Campbell with him, for Christ's sake. Say no more. I've sympathised with New Zealand on that tour.
I tell you what, it does. I mean, I guess in this room we're all rugby fans, but New Zealand does cause you to reassess the point, the part that rugby plays in your life. Because at the end, you just don't want to see one rugby match ever again. You don't want to talk to a waiter who wants to talk about rugby. You don't want to talk to when you're going to cut through immigration, the bastards, they always know.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, Jesus Christ. At the end, you just want to get in that terminal on the way out and you want to go and watch a cricket match. Honestly.
I remember when I joke about breaking my leg in Rotorua, which wasn't a joke, clearly it was very painful. And James Robson, the Lions doctor, came onto the field and attended to me, and I'd fractured, dislocated my ankle. So it was basically facing in the opposite direction. And And he sort of glided it back into place, which was good. And then as I was being stretchered off the field, the game started again, and the guy stretching me off was sort of watching the game. So I took my Lions shirt off and I gave it to another guy as I was going off, saying, look, could you hang that on the peg of the guy that I'm playing against, because I'm sure he'll want that. And then I arrived at hospital. I kid you not, Rotorua General Hospital, there was no one there. Because they were all at the game. And they left a very young junior orthopaedic surgeon there. He must have lost the three-car brag or something. I don't quite know what happened. He was there, and he looked at me. He came out as I was being lifted off the ambulance, and he looked at me. He said, mate, he said, I've just seen it on the telly. He said, I reckon you fractured, dislocated your ankle. and I'm lying there with my ankle facing the wrong way. And then he started foaming at the mouth. And he got terribly excited. And then he looked at me and said, can I have your kit? At which point I then said to him, listen, you go and get me some morphine, young man. You can have the entire kit bag. And then the surgeon came back from the match. The senior surgeon, he was clearly over refreshed. He looked at my leg and he said, yeah, we'll operate on that in the morning. And I looked at the doctor, Gary O'Driscoll, who now sits next to Arsene Wenger. Not sure for how much longer, obviously, but he sits next to Arsene Wenger. And I said, Gary, there is no way this guy's operating on me in the morning. I said, go and find me whoever operates on Sean Fitzpatrick. I said, that is who is operating on me in the morning. Anyway, that was good fun.
Very good, very good.
Steve, are you going to expand a bit? I mean, do we need to talk about Queenstown and urinals, or do you want to tell the story yourself? you are a celebrity there. I mean, are you not one of the three best known people, or is it most hated people?
Third most hated.
Right.
Well, the Queenstown thing, I don't know if any of you have been here. There's a real dodgy club in Queenstown.
It's a really good bar, actually.
No, it's terrible.
It's really good.
And they've done, because they hated Wayne Barnes, the referee, after, 2007?
2007. The France game, yeah.
And they hate me. They've done these huge ceramic urinals, about this big, which you wee into a kind of face of myself and Wayne Barnes. It's true.
It's a bust of your head.
Yeah, it is. But
it is true, I've actually gone on it.
No, yeah. You did. Slotty went on holiday with his family. He said, Steve, I just had a piss in your face. But the worst thing is, and it's taken away all the, this is true, it's taken away all the glory, is that now they've added a third. It's me, Wayne Barnes, and Trump. Does he?
Actually, Steve, if I could come in there, it's not. The good news for you is it's back to two. But Wayne has been removed now, so it is just you and the Donald.
How would you choose?
I'm actually seriously pissed off about that.
What? You seem distraught.
I am, seriously. Go on.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, Visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
I mean, isn't that a lot to do with the New Zealand psyche, though? They always like, from growing up from an early age in rugby, they like to drive the agenda on the pitch. They like to drive the agenda off the pitch. And occasionally you get people who don't, you know, genuflect and worship the ground that they walk on and might challenge them in a few different areas in terms of their belief systems, and they take exception to that. And, you know, I mean, Clyde Woodward, the first thing he did, which was brilliant as a coach, you know, he did a lot of things right, he did a lot of things wrong, but one of the best things he ever did when he first took over England was in 1997, because he had a long way to go in terms of his coaching career. He said, right, where do the All Blacks stay when they come and play in England? They said, when the bloke sort of looked down the list, he said, well, they stay in this place called the Pennyhill Park Hotel. He went, not anymore, they don't. He said, we're going to chuck them out. And isn't it funny how the All Blacks were criticising the Pennyhill Park Hotel when they came over here for the last World Cup? Well, they were the ones that chose that as the best place to stay.
Yeah.
It's good.
I didn't know that.
That's a great story.
It was just a little signal to send to them saying, we're not as good as you yet, but we're going to come and get you. And pioneer.
Lawrence, on the subject of the Lions team, obviously... the withdrawal of Billy Vunipola.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
How does that affect?
Well, I've had some bad text messages in my life, I can assure you, plenty. But
No.
You told me. But that was not great news for anyone. I mean, you wrote a piece saying if there's one player that you wouldn't want to lose, or he would be up there in the top four or five, he'd be absolutely number one at the moment.
I said he's my number two after Farrell.
He's got to be, well, that's a backs forwards thing, isn't it, really? But he. You know that forwards win matches, all right?
Say something now.
No, listen, he was in absolutely devastating form. And, you know, not only does it. He was one of the players that you genuinely, New Zealand, although they wouldn't admit it, would have been very concerned about, because he's in devastatingly good form.
Absolutely.
He can do things. He's one of the most improved players in world rugby, I think. He's probably playing the best rugby of any forward in the world at the moment. And he can do things that few players can do. And actually, he's one of those guys that people can really follow. And so I was very, very, a big sigh, big sigh came out of myself and every single person that I, that thinks about the starting 15 would have unquestionably, whether you're Scottish, Welsh, Irish or English, put him down as the number eight and probably one of the key men on the tour.
But it affects more than just that position, doesn't it? The whole balance of the back row is going to change. Jonesy Barnes, how does that move now? I think that the number sixes are going to have a different personality as well.
Well, there's a big shift now. I mean, Billy was a ball carrier, fantastic at the breakdown. As Lawrence says, I'm a back, but I still think Lawrence is the number one man, so it's not a back forwards thing. And forwards actually give you an opportunity to win matches. Yes. They don't necessarily do it. They need these intelligent little people to put them in the right place. They win ball in their own 22, no bloody use to anyone. The number 9, the number 10, they put them there, and then the forwards trundle over like Exeter from 2 yards. And then they say, we won the game, we decided. They don't. But anyway, I will agree about Billy Vunipola. Sorry, that was a digression. Where were we? Well, the back row.
You take him on a night out in New Zealand, Barnsley, that's for sure.
Digress whatever you want, Barnsley. You're riffing now.
The back row. Billy is a great carrier, brilliant over the breakdown. As Lawrence says, he's probably the best player in the world at the moment. There was a chance they were going to play Talupe Faletau, who's had a sensational end of the season. He's going some playing well for Bath the way they're playing at the moment. But he could have played six. He's got a line out forward. He's another carrier. But he's going to have to go to eight. He's going to have to go to eight because he's a class act. You need a top level eight. So what do you do at six? You then say, do we need another ball carrier there? I mean, Sean O'Brien comes into it because with Faletau going to eight and Vunipola dropping out, you've lost your out-and-out ball carrier. I think that's the key thing. Somebody's got to just go bang, bang, bang. And people have been saying CJ Stander, but Stander, I think, does it to a certain level. And that's an international level as well. But I've just been watching him the last 2 months, and I'm thinking he carries a lot. It's this awful statistics thing, you know? He's made 28 carries, and you go, wow, let's make him man of the match. And then you realise he's gone minus 2 metres. And it was the old Steve Borthwick thing, Steve, wasn't it? Everyone used to say, Borthos has carried really well today, and he's gone backwards over 12 carries. So the number of carries don't matter, it's the impact of the carries. And Billy had massive impact, and he carried so hard and fast, he could have pulled Kieran Reid off the wing, where he's so dangerous for New Zealand, and changed the way New Zealand play their game. And that has gone now, so it's a major restructure of the back row.
Lawrence, what would your back row makeup be now with that Billy?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is because he's genuinely world class. So, you know, Faletau hopefully will step up and perform, you know, way beyond the levels that we've seen this season anyway, because he will have to. I think Peter Omahni is another one who may have only been taken on the tour to really play in some of those midweek games, but actually could end up being, you know, forcing his way into the test side. I just worry about, I mean, there will, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, I don't think Billy will be the last person in the back row that won't finish the Lions tour. It is such an attritional position. You know, there's normally an average, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but about 8 replacements on the Lions tour.
They budgeted for 8 to 10. That's
8 to 10.
Sort of
8 to 10. Yeah. Well, we've had 2 already.
Yeah.
We haven't even taken off yet, and we've got a couple of, you know, so there will be some more. And I look at some of those players and look at, you know, how they get through the Six Nations. You know, everyone's complaining about the Six Nations taking place over 7 weeks. Well, up the intensity by 2 or 3 notches, and then you've got the Lions tour really. So it's going to be very, very tough. But that's the challenge they face. I hope Sean O'Brien raises, you know, is one of those players, and there'll be one or two that we're not talking about now that will hopefully come through. What it does do is put even more onus on the tight five to really turn the screw on the All Blacks. I mean, if there was an area where we were going to attack them, it's going to be in the tight five as well. And the reason why New Zealand have improved their rugby so much from even where they were 10 years ago is because their tight five have actually got a set piece that fronts up, whereas it used to be challenged. But I think Gatland sees that as a real area where they've got to attack New Zealand, and hopefully that'll that'll come off.
How good are these All Blacks at the moment, guys? They've obviously double world champions. They've got question marks over whether their captain's going to be fit. Their superstar hooker has not played for 3 months or so, or hardly. Is there anything in the media that's overhyping them at the moment, or are they as good as we all think they are? Jonesy, go on.
Well, I mean, people spend their lives in terror of the All Blacks. I remember in 2003 when England won the World Cup, they went down to New Zealand on tour, and they beat New Zealand in New Zealand, that famous time when they had a six-man pack, and I was just so excited by this. I went up to Lawrence after and said, oh, I can't believe it, you know, you beat New Zealand in New Zealand. And Lawrence said, for Christ's sake, calm down. He said, we were crap. And that's the attitude to New Zealand that no one has. We just let them, however they want to play the game, however they want the game refereed, however they want it coached, however they want the system to be at home, they try and foist it on everybody else. And the way to beat them is not to say, we're going to beat you at your game. We're going to go down there and play our game. So, of course, they're overhyped. They always are. You never find a Kiwi newspaper which doesn't have 15 Kiwis in the world 15. they, I'm serious. And you know, it's, look, you can't argue with their results. But you know, at the moment in the Four Nations down there, Argentina rebuilding, Australia really struggling, South Africa having a disastrous time because of quotas and things like that. So, you know, it's not that difficult. The Six Nations is no stronger, but because they're overhyped, and the question is to cut through all the hype. They've got 15, Lions have got 15, the pitch is the same, the ball's the same. The referees this time are French, not the usual cheats that we get when we go down. I mean it. I mean, you look at the history of it. So, you know, don't bother, don't get sucked in by the aura. There's 15 of them, 15 of us.
Well, that's true, but if you look at the win record, New Zealand have lost one series in the history to the Lions. If you look at New Zealand in the last 6 years, they've lost 2 games out of 2,368. These are significant statistics.
It's a fair point.
These are significant. And it doesn't really matter what we say, it's what players believe. And I see players and I talk to players and I look in the players' eyes, and most players don't have what Warren Gatland wants, which is a belief that they can win. And that is a significant issue. Steve's right, by the way. You know, the French referees will be a big boost for the Lions if they can get at the All Blacks in the scrum. But it is a monumental test. They are joint World Cup winners. You know, they were an outstanding team here in England. They were an outstanding team in 2015. They lost McCaw, they lost Carter, they lost Conrad Smith, they lost Ma Nonu, four brilliant players. And for the first year after that, they became an even better team. Yeah, they've lost one game since the World Cup, and that was in Chicago when they were doing an imitation of me and were on the piss. So you cannot underestimate, you cannot overhype. I don't think you can overhype New Zealand, and you can't overestimate the challenge for the Lions. Not to say they don't have a chance, but it is to say I'd show New Zealand a lot more respect than Steve. I think they're one. The winning record shows they're one of the greatest sporting teams on this planet. I mean, they win.
Barnsley, you will never get your Urinal like that.
No.
You've got to work harder.
Well, the other
lucky.
The other statistic that doesn't lend itself to very favourably is that I don't think the All Blacks have lost at Eden Park since 1994.
Correct.
And two of the test matches out of the three are at Eden Park. So when I say that the players who are playing for the Lions have to play 15 out of 10, I mean 15 out of 10. It's fair to say that we know all the Lions players and we talk about them intimately about, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. In New Zealand, I promise you now, there's a players on this tour that they would have not heard of. And they won't. I mean, not the New Zealand management, but the New Zealand public, you know, because they don't watch a lot of our rugby. They're so obsessed with their own rugby. And there are players on this tour that they won't know a huge amount about, and that's the way it is in New Zealand. You've got to go and earn their respect, and the only way you can get respect from people in New Zealand is to beat them, and that's the challenge that these guys have got. And you know, Ben Clark was the man of the series in 93, and I'm not sure how many people knew about Ben Clark before he arrived in New Zealand, but by God, they wanted to keep him by the end of the tour. And you know, you've got to approach the tour and say, I want these people to want me to stay behind, in fact, or put me on the first plane home because they really hate me. But you need to win their respect. And I think if the Lions have that mentality, then that'll go a long way towards helping them, for sure.
I mean, I'm going to just say one thing there. What you said about New Zealanders, management will know, but fans won't. I was talking to Dan Carter at the European Cup final. I was chatting about, you know, what sort of research will the All Blacks have done on the Lions? And he smiled, and he had that sort of, you've caught us out here. And he said, to be honest, we don't watch a lot of rugby from Europe. He said, we really don't. We watch the big European occasions because it's amazing with 80,000 there. But he said, we won't know a lot of the players. And he sort of said, you know, we're sort of pretty interested in what we do ourselves. So you're absolutely right there. And there is definitely a sort of, we're the best, so why do we need to look? And that's somewhere where the Lions have to come up with something a little bit different.
But that's also a mentality that could one day stitch them up.
Definitely.
If you stop looking, stop learning and believe in your own...
Yeah, but they believe that they are the pioneers, and until we start doing things differently and challenging them in a bit in a different way, that they will continue to pioneer. They're the ones that set the rules, and then they decide that we get them 12 months later, don't they? So
yeah,
you know, we got to cut all that out for world rugby very soon.
So if the Lions are to have the right mentality, they will clearly have to have an Owen Farrell somewhere crucial to the game plan. I just wonder what our panel thinks should be the 10-12 combination. There are three possibilities. Let me have a show of hands. There's a popular Section at 10 and Farrell at 12 combination. Alternative, you have Section at 10 and A and Other at 12, or Farrell at 10 and A and Other at 12. Who would be for the Section Farrell combination here?
Jesus, I better rewrite my column for Sunday.
You used to say that, Barnsley. You're turning
all season. All season. All season. I've said that because I thought Sexton and Farrell were the two best playmakers that British and Irish Lions had. And I thought you had to get them on the field. Johnny is looking a little bit troubled, and I think Farrell right now is playing so much better at fly half than him, even though he didn't have a great game. But hey, we all have bad games now and again against Exeter. Farrell has been different level to him this season. And the other thing that worries me, Owen tackles very high. He's got this rugby league, comes at you like that. And at 10, he's sheltered a bit. But when he gets in that wider channel, as you saw in the European Cup final, when Paselli Yato, the Clermont flanker, just smashed him. He goes high like that, the All Blacks will go straight through. And I think now there's just been an end-of-season shift. I think Sexton's not fully fit. I think mentally he's not quite there. and I think Farrell suddenly has become the one. And it's a really interesting article in the Sunday supplement coming up. Some of you might want to think again. You might want to think again.
Look, I'm not going to go against the majority of Times Plus members. Except, I'm sorry, but you're all wrong. I'm afraid what Warren, in terms of inside scent, first of all, I don't think Sexton is anywhere remotely near how good he can be.
No.
And he's not ready to be savagely targeted, which he will be. I think Farrell is the sort of character who will love being targeted and give a bit back. But as for the inside centre, the 10-12 combination, you have to remember that Warren Gatland is, for 95% of his career as an international coach, his inside centre has been Jamie Roberts, who's 6'5" and 19 stone. And I think that's what you'll go for this time, the biggest and the baddest. Mm. And I don't think, it's not like Eddie Jones picking Ford and then Farrell for the relative tranquility of the Six Nations. It's a horrible environment, and I'm really sorry, but I don't think Johnny Sexton is part of that.
I agree.
Lawrence?
Well, I think I'd like to see Sexton and Farrell play alternate games at 10. I don't, you know.
You don't want them together?
I don't like Farrell as a 12, not because I don't like him. I think he's world class, brilliant player, but I just think that, it's a deficiency in the English game that we play him at 12. I don't think Ford deserved to play 10 all season, quite frankly, but I think Farrell should have been at 10 all season. So I'd like to see Owen at 10.
Well, England haven't developed a good enough 12 to replace
exactly.
At
so,
the moment.
So therefore, I mean, I'd like to think that, they'll play three games each at 10 and you pick the best 10, or the fittest one.
Okay, let's just go down the line. The makeup of the squad, who do you feel has been most hard done by not to be in there?
I think you better start with Lawrence the Wasp here as a clue.
Well, I mean, it's scandalous that Launchbury's not in the team. I mean, and not just because he's a Wasp. I mean, I said to the lad, I said to him, you couldn't have done any more. He's not a self-publicist, which is unlike his previous Wasp captain. previous Wasp captain.
Not at all, is he?
Previous Wasp captains, actually. But, he's been outstanding, and I don't know what it is about Launchbury. People say, he's not physically, is he not maybe the mongrel that certain other players are?
I think it's because he's got a nice haircut.
He has
a lisp, he doesn't have any tattoos. I just think he looks nice. I don't think he looks hard.
Well, he doesn't call line outs, does he? And that's the real crux of the matter. And I think, shock horror, but that's the case.
Who would you have, Steve, who's not there?
I would have started with Haskell. I would have put him in the team first of all. I think there are too many blind sides there. They could have weeded him out and put James there. I do have to say that this team is one of the better selected Lions teams. Some of them have been disastrous, and this is a reasonably selected Lions team.
When you were asking that, it's very difficult to work out who's really unlucky. I mean, Launchbury is the obvious one. Now, I wouldn't say this bloke's unlucky, but I think it's a wrong selection leaving him out, and that's Dylan Hartley. Now, Hartley has not had a very good season. He's missed tackles. People have forgotten that he used to have an offloading and a carrying game. He's a skillful footballer, and he's really just stopped completely. I mean, things have gone badly at Northampton. He's had his suspensions. It's been a bad season. But throughout his mediocrity around the park, what he has done is throw bloody accurately all the time. And I was just watching the Saracens scrum the last few games, and I'm thinking, they got Mako and Jamie George and both the second rows, yet they're getting murdered by Exeter. And I thought, okay, I know Mako scrummaging is not as strong as other parts of his game, but is there maybe something in the fact that Jamie George is a really strong impact sub, and Hartley is also a bloody good scrummager? And
actually, George has slightly dropped off the last few.
I think he has. Lawrence made a point earlier saying, you take on the All Blacks, you have to have a go at their front five. If you don't beat their front five and they're on the front foot, you are going to lose the series. So you need front five forwards who are technically really good at what they do. And OK, Hartley hasn't been flash. And 2 months ago, I was saying he shouldn't be going. But as it's got towards the end, you're thinking, hang on a minute, what are the priorities? And I think, not that he's unlucky, because I don't think he's played well, but I think it's a wrong selection, because I think by the end of the season, he was playing better than he had for England, but his set-piece work is crucial. And you look at Rory Best, who under pressure really struggles there. I look at Jamie George, and I think there's a question mark. Ken Owens is in great form, but that's the only one. So I think Dylan Hartley is not unlucky, but wrongly left out.
I think Hooker's just one position where the Lions aren't just, where they don't have devastationally strong player, I would say that. The player that I think should be on that trip that isn't is the guy who didn't get the call up as the number, as the replacement three scrum half, which is Richard Wigglesworth. I didn't mind that he wasn't on the original trip, but to put Greg Laidlaw ahead of him, I thought was the idea of a scrum half of Conor Murray or Reece Webb going injured and Laidlaw having to come off the bench in the Test match
this is just
he can't box kick.
No,
his delivery is slow, and they don't need a leader or a kicker because they've got enough of them.
This is a really weird piece of logic because Greg Laidlaw's going because he plays for Scotland. So Richard, no.
Well, that logic didn't work with the initial squad, did it?
No, but Warren Gatland, as he said, I'm going on international form. He plays international rugby. For whatever reason, Richard Wigglesworth, maybe Eddie Jones thinks he's too old and he won't be there for Japan. That's 2 years away. The Lions is the here and now. So if Richard Wigglesworth was born in Scotland and was playing for Glasgow, all of us here would have assumed he would have been the Scottish scrum half. Had he been the Scottish scrum half, he would have been an initial selection of the Lion. Yeah. So where is the logic? Just because he's English and plays for WASC, him not going ahead of Laidlaw? I don't get it.
Well, okay. Lovely to agree.
Well, he has been now called up to the England squad for the...
Wigglesworth has.
Yeah. For the Barbarians.
Yeah, so, what's a great honour for him.
And there are now more... there are now more Scottish squad members in the Lions than there are members of the Vunipola family as well.
Let's just go down the line and a test series prediction. We'll start at your end, Barnsley.
Yeah, I thought so.
Well, let's start here if you want.
No, I think New Zealand will win 3-0. Could only get better.
Go on, Jonesy. Brighten up the day.
Oh, God. It's so difficult. I've been on so many of these trips. It's very, very difficult. If they win one, I'm afraid to say it'll almost be some kind of moral victory. If I had to back it, God. If they win the second test, it'll be brilliant. How could they be ready for the first test?
Heroic?
Heroic. It's in 4 weeks' time or something stupid like that. They've just got no time to prepare, and it can't go on being like this. If I had to put my swearing blood, they'd lose 3-0, but they maybe just have it in them to win one. If it's one of the first two, great, because it means the third test is then live.
I think that you can't underestimate the importance of winning that first test. It was the same in 97 in South Africa. Momentum, because actually New Zealand, as much as the rugby is their strength, it's also their weakness as well, because if they lose, which is quite inconceivable to them, but if they did lose that first test, the entire nation will turn on their team. It is quite, you know, when I say turn on the team, it's like the first five questions in Parliament on Monday morning. So I will go out and say that if the Lions win that first test, and it's a big if, then I can see them winning the series 2-1. Yeah. If they lose the first test, I think they'll lose the series 3-0.
I just say,
if I have my prediction, Barney.
Sorry, Owen.
Yeah. No. I'm sort of with Jonesy. I can't see a way. I can't see a logical way to argue that they could win. That should win the first test. It's
everything has to go in your favour.
It just doesn't seem to work. So I think they could win the second test because they'll have had a match. They'll have a run out. They'll be better. I would just pray for it to go to that third test, 1-1. The series to the live would be wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.